So the issue, first of all, is what is the definition of an infant? And Tosfot is first saying that it means anyone who has not been accustomed to idolatrous ways. And secondly, is the halacha according to Rav and or according to Shmuel? U'pasku halachot kidolot, delo karav betinot ben yomok. The halachot kidolot that said that the law here, even though in general, if there's a difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel on matters of Isurim, the halacha is like Rav, here the halacha is not like Rav, and therefore if a day-old infant comes in contact with wine, the wine is permissible. But Rabbeinu Chananel nami pasak kishmuel, the ve'inan shikua, k'da mefayish Rav Yeshua ben Levi l'milteh, u'pam achat, matzah ri katur, v'tosfot halomdim l'fnei Rabbeinu Tam, shouldn't say v'tosef, it should be v'tosfot halomdim l'fnei Rabbeinu Tam, but according to the students' notes, who were students of Rabbeinu Tam, shepasku, the halacha kishmuel, that the halacha is like Shmuel, ho'il v'savar Yehoshua ben kabateh, because Rav Yehoshua ben Levi seems to be of the same opinion. V'halachak Rav Yehoshua ben Levi l'gabei Rav Yochanan. Rav Yehoshua ben Levi carries the day against Rav Yochanan. V'kol shekein l'gabei Rav Shmuel she'ein halacha kemotan l'gabei Rav Yochanan. So therefore, since Rav Yehoshua ben Levi majorizes Rav Yochanan and Rav Yochanan majorizes Rav and Shmuel, v'halacha should be like Shmuel in this instance, even though in general v'halacha is like Rav. Aniso. וגם בסדר תנאים ואמורים, כתיבת יד הרב הגדול רב יוסף טוב אלן, also in the manuscript of סדר תנאים ואמוראים, of manuscript of רב יוסף טוב אלן, פוסק, טוב אלן is the Hebrew translation of Bon Fis, פוסק הלכה כמותו בכל מקום, that the halacha is like רב יהושע בן לוי in all matters. וגם רבנו תם הביא הרבה ראיות על זה, וכולם נדחו. רבנו תם brought many proofs to this position and they were all rejected. ועוד פסק רבנו תם, כלשנדי אמרו כאן מדרסם בשוק טהור ובשל צוחים הלכה מקל, ופיל אותו לשון פליג שמואל הדורה ותינוק בן יומו. ועוד פירש רשפן ואוריבן בשם רשי. Now we have an additional source. But we learned last week that רשפן ואוריבן quoted רשי שכתוב בתשובת הגאונים כי בזמן הזה אין איסור הנאה במגע עובי כוכבים ביין. Nowadays, there's no prohibition to derive benefit from the contact of a non-Jew with wine. Ki ovdei kochavim shelachshav einu regilim lenasech b'avodat kochavim, v'chashuvim ke ein yodim b'tev avodat kochavim u'mishamshei. V'havi leketinot v'niyomal. So we now have a completely separate decision that says that nowadays, in the Christian communities of Europe, the non-Jew should be considered as far as a day-old infant is concerned because there's never any intent for libation, and therefore the wine that he comes in contact with should be permissible to have derived the benefit from. Va'al zeh anu somchim, and that's the reason why we rely on the permission legabot yinid of adei kochavim b'chavotein. And that's why we are able to accept payment in kind when a non-Jew wants to pay with wine. Okay. Now, of course, if you put the two things together, that is, if you put together the law that says that the halacha is like Shmuel, that tinok ben yomo is allowed, does not render the wine prohibited even for drinking, and if you take also the tshuvat ha-ga'onim, which says that nowadays even an adult non-Jew has the status as a day-old infant because they no longer perform libation, bal davar zeh shalach lo ri l'Rabbeinu Tam, the Ri wrote a letter to Rabbeinu Tam, saying, Hochazi, look, the Minach Umeyavuch Umeyachuch, from what you've written, and from what your father has written, and from what your brother has written, Mishtari Magal Beit Kochavim Beyayin La'alma Afilu Bishtiya. It would logically follow that there should be no prohibition of wine which a non-Jew comes in contact altogether. The Achich of Shmuel Pasak B'Shem, should say Sabach, Rav Shmuel decided in the name of your grandfather, Rashi, Rabbi Yehoshua Shlomo, the Halvei Kochavim B'Zman Hazeh Einam Chashuvim Ela Ketinot B'Yomo. That nowadays non-Jews have the same status as a day-old infant. V'Atah Posek B'Tinot Ben Yomo K'Shmuel, and you decide that as far as a day-old infant is concerned, the law is like Shmuel, the Itle De Eino Oseh Ya'Nesech L'Esor Akbet Shiva. So the logical conclusion from these two positions is that the law of Yayin Nesach should be eliminated altogether. Now, of course, And therefore, just like we have the story with Rava and Rav Huna in the Gemara, we have a similar event here. That the student, whoever wrote this, was in too much in a hurry to write. That the law cannot be like Shmuel. He sees what the logical conclusion of his position would be, and therefore the law cannot be like Shmuel. But he note ben yomo osei yai nesak leshabishtiya. Beodei kochavim bezman ozeh vaday hem ketinok ben yomo kipesak labenu shlomo. Vegam ein alacha kishmuel bavadim shemalu velo kavu latsuch yud beiz kodesh leshlakeh da vayta meher minei leshna liyama tohar da kaimelan kavate vekeven kaimelan karav vahid tinok tinok. וכן היה הננהג בבני אשכנז שנוגעים עבדים ביין אחרי שמרלו ותרבו ביד. ואין להקשות מבישוע בן לוי, במשמע דקאי כבתנו. רבישוע בן לוי לא קאי הדברי שמואל. רבישוע בן לוי wasn't talking about Shmuel's specific law as far as the drink of the contact of an infant was concerned. לפרש דבריו, דהאי הוא קשיש מיני. After all, רבישוע בן לוי was in a previous generation. ועיקר דבריו, של רבי שעברין רבי יבנו פרק החולץ גבי הלוקח עבד מרווי כוחים הגלגלים היו בעיס קודש ותלמוד עקב ההוכח. It's just that the Gemara quoted Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi in contact with this discussion לפרושי מילתא לשמואל. Okay. That when you had a non-Jewish slave who was possibly converted to Judaism and became part of the household, they didn't worry about his contact with the wine. Miu Hayar Rimakshe. Rav Riv asked further, Achlafi Zehapsak, Shapasak Rabbeinu Shmuel Karav, Betinot Ben Yomo, in Cain, Hech Natir Magal Vodko Chavain Bahanam, Itam Nimok Ben Yomo. Even if you agree with Rav that that one should be prohibited for drinking but permissible to have derived benefit flow, Ma Inyan Zelazeh. Why should there be any relationship whatsoever between the notion of an infant, a child, who has no intent to do anything? So if a day-old infant comes in contact with the wine, not only has he no intent to perform libation, he has no intent to touch the wine. Ma inyan zeh lezeh? V'halo ma she'anu matiyubim betinok isur hana'ah. The reason why we don't enforce a prohibition of hana'ah, haynu mishum she'ein bo afilu kavanat maga. There's not even any intent to touch. V'im kein, ovdei kochavim v'zman hazeh shemekavnim l'maga, yiyas yasru afilu b'hanaha. They should make the wine prohibited even from benefit. V'dahal kochach kaimelan shekhamura kavanat maga ach v'lo kavanat nisuch mahid alekar kavanah, klal, to the Freddy Shleil, Gabi Veshul Lulivet, l'perish Rabbeinu Tam. V'chazar Rabbeinu Tam v'amar, so Rabbeinu Tam rejoined, v'adai mitoch halachot, certainly, if you're trying to derive a clear-cut reason to permit the common practice of accepting wine in payment for debts, the vaday mitocha halachot lo matzino ve'ayap shuta lahatir maga obeid kochavim b'yayin va'af lo stam yeinam v'hana'a. Therefore, we really can't find any clear-cut permissibility to derive a benefit from wine of a non-Jew. The only thing from the Gemara that we can conclude is that if a non-Jew touches your wine, you're allowed to sell the wine to him, because what you're doing is receiving payment for damages. In other words, if a particular non-Jew touches your wine and renders your wine prohibited, he's caused you some damage, so therefore you're allowed to collect the damages from him in the context of selling him the wine. But you would not be allowed to sell it to a different non-Jew who is not liable to you for damage. So the only real permissibility which is allowed would be to collect for damages.
The Gemara didn't say that.
The Gemara said that in that particular case it was as if he caused damage. They hid Rabbeinu Tam al Rabbi Meir Aviv, and Rabbeinu.
Very good way to buy your liquor cheap.
Right. Here, Rabbeinu Tam al Rabbeinu Meir Aviv, and Rabbeinu Tam even testified on his father, Rabbi Meir, ki pan nizdamein lo yayin esech. There was a case in which a debtor tried to pay in kind with yayin esech, v'psibo v'yadayin. And he actually spilled out the wine and did not want to derive any benefit.
Your concern is the libations, and the libation still hasn't occurred that potentially would if he took that as damages.
Well, no, but this is wine of a non-Jew, so he came in contact with it earlier.
Right, so you can take it. You can take the money as damages.
In the case that a non-Jew comes in touch with your wine,
right.
then there's still even though you're not allowed to derive benefit from that wine, you can collect money from that particular non-Jew because you're getting payment in kind for the damages that he caused.
And let him walk off with the wine.
And let him off walk off with
the potential that he would offer libation from.
That's not your business. Okay. So therefore, Rabbeinu Tam finally is subdued by these arguments, even though he had some various arguments which would permit things. He now says, well, I can't find an actual reason in the Talmud which would allow me to conclude that this was permissible. V'af al pichein, nevertheless, lo ratza Rabbeinu le'esol. Rabbeinu Tam did not want to issue a ruling saying that one is not allowed to derive benefit from this wine. Ho'ilu pashat ha-minhag lahatir, since the everyday practice was to allow one to derive benefit from this wine, v'hanach li-Yisrael shiyu shogegim v'alyu mezidim. Therefore, I can't issue a proclamation that nobody's going to follow, so if I don't say anything, the people who are doing this will think that it's permissible because their parents did it and their grandparents did it and so on, so therefore they do not realize that they're violating the strict law as it emerges in the Talmud, and therefore it's better that I keep my mouth shut than I proclaim that this is prohibited. So even someone like Rabbeinu Tam, we see two aspects here. On the one hand, he was unwilling to hold his ground against the attack by the Ri as far as his original reasons for allowing this was concerned. So just like Rava backed off when he was challenged, but Moshe Feinstein didn't back off, by the way. He's an example of someone who stood his ground as far as this issue is concerned. But both Rava and the Gemara and Rabbeinu Tam, who is the most forceful personality, nevertheless was a bit too intimidated by the arguments on the other side. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Tam had the good sense not to try to proclaim something as being prohibited that he knew that no one would listen to him. So he says, "Mutaf shiyu shogegim v'al yu mezidim." Okay. Umikol makom. And then he tries to find other reasons. You need not read it in detail, in which he tries to explain why there is this common practice. So, from the evidence that we have, we know that the Jews, at least in Germany and possibly as well in France, were heavily involved in the wine business, and perhaps this practice in Germany filtered over into France. We know that Rabbeinu Tam could not, after being intimidated by the Ri, could not find a logical reason to permit it, but on the other hand, he was had enough sense to go against it. Not to go against it in public. Now, there are also completely other areas in which there would be reasons to be more permissible than was the case. Remember, we started this subject by learning the Mishnah of Halokeach Gat Be'uta, but if someone buys a pressed wine press from a non-Jew, so long as the wine hasn't drained out, it's not considered wine. Now, let's go back to that problem. Remember that one of the issues were that there were not enough non-Jews around to do the pressing of the wine. So why not simply construct wine presses in such a fashion that the treading is done by non-Jews while the wine barrel in which the pressing is done is completely sealed so that there's no separation of the juice from the grapes, and then let the Jews take over at a later stage in the production. On that, there's also every reason to find heterim, permissibilities, and this whole article of Rabbi Soloveitchik discusses this issue of Hamshach. I don't want to study the whole article because it's highly technical. Where's my page 196? Okay. I'm missing one page. Yeah, okay. I think, yeah, that's a good point, but in fact, they were aware of this, after all, but... I think that the argument goes in the reverse direction, and that's a point that Professor Soloveitchik makes. But let me just read together with just the last couple of paragraphs, page 195 and 196 in this article. France and Germany melded into one halakhic community as the awesome figure of Rabbeinu Tam receded into memory and the emotional bias against Tredi waned, people began to reap the rich fruits of Tam's labors and those of his grandfathers. The curtains fall on Ashkenaz around the year 1300, with Gentiles treading and Gentiles touching and Gentiles handling the entire first phase of Jewish wine production. So in fact, as long as they were still in the sealed vats of... they did allow Jewish workers after some of the non-Jewish workers.
Mm-hmm.
That the wine had not separated away from the grapes by drawing out of the container. In the still of the 14th century, after all the titans had departed, a last protesting murmur was heard, almost as an epilogue, in the now empty halls of the Tosafists. The editor of a much copied compendium ranged around the Alfasi, could not refrain from interrupting his transcription of Rashi and Asugi with this resigned note. Vaha'idna, nowadays, nohagim, shelokhim gigiyot maliyot anavim duruchim min hagayim, v'samchim al ha-mishnah betohim. Nowadays, the practice is to buy vats full of pressed grapes, which were pressed by non-Jews, because the wine of that grape juice had not yet separated from the grapes, and they rely on the Mishnah that we first read, the Toin, and they are mistaken in this. In the bodily manuscript of this work, the scribe omitted the last word, omitted the phrase the Toin, and the issue is, was it omitted intentionally because they couldn't sustain this any longer? So, but the issue that Aviva raises is a serious one. Why was this taboo? There are several different reasons, halachic reasons, that one could give for simply eliminating the prohibition altogether. There's no long, libation is no longer performed. Certainly during those times, the issue of social intercourse wasn't one. The Jews and the non-Christians simply did not mix socially. So the issues of danger of intermarriage or social intercourse or things of this nature weren't a reality. And as Professor Soloveitchik points out, this was never raised as an issue except towards the end of the, except during the 12th century. And his point is that the reason that that, and furthermore, as we will, if we have a chance next week, we'll read the Tshuva of the Rama, who tries to justify the practice in Bohemia and Moravia in the 16th century, when people in fact were drinking non-Jewish wine, and wine which was touched by non-Jews. And he relies precisely on these arguments that were given and rejected in Tosfot. As I mentioned, this particular tshuva of the Rama was censored out of many of the printed editions. Why was there a persistence in the maintenance of this particular taboo? And what Professor Soloveitchik says, and I think that it has a certain amount of logic to it, is that up through this time, as we mentioned last week, up through the middle of the 12th century, there was a traditional Christian anti-Semitism which at least had some sort of a rational, if you want to use that word, basis. The Jews were different, they were keeping to themselves, they were engaged in some practices which might offend non-Jews. This was the classical form of anti-Semitism. Then there was the Christian religious anti-Semitism, which was also had some kind of a theological or rational basis. Jews, after all, according to the Christians, at least participated, or at least approved of, the execution of Jesus. They didn't accept Jesus as God. They didn't have any respect for Mary. So there was a theological, rational, if you want to use the word, basis to hate the Jews. But in the middle of the 12th century, what developed was this completely pathological form of anti-Semitism that had no basis in reality whatsoever, but was reflecting internal Christian fears. The Jews all of a sudden had a worldwide conspiracy to sacrifice one Christian child every year. That was William of Norwich and all of the successive ones. The Jews were engaged in ritual cannibalism. They needed non-Jewish blood. Not only did they need Christian blood, they needed to bake the matzah. And now in the Islamic world, we make hamantaschen out of, it's no joke, out of non-Jewish blood. All of a sudden, the Jews were being murdered, not for the classical reasons, but because of just a form of irrationality which had gripped the Christian community, just like this irrationality is gripping the Islamic community today. And therefore, the Jews had to react to this in some way, and just simply disgust and abhorrence towards the Christians who were their persecutors developed. And this was one area in which this taboo could be a reflection of that anti-Christian reaction against the form of irrational anti-Semitism which developed. And I have no particular hatred of the Muslims, but certainly when I see what the Muslim world is saying about the Jews today, I cannot be devoid of any negative reaction against them, even though it may not be justified. And similarly here, this was one aspect in which there was a clear-cut ritual relationship between Jew and non-Jew, and Rabbi Soloveitchik is saying that the reason that this taboo persisted, even in the face of the fact that there would be perfectly logical halachic arguments to allow it, was because of the emergence of irrational anti-Semitism in the Christian community, and this was a measure of a Jewish emotional response to it.
So,
no, the that was in the book that we read last week, which I don't have down here, and I forgot the author's name. Gavin something, but I forgot. All right. What I would like to do as a cleanup next time is to read this censored Tshuva V'Rama and some of the other laws. I do not want to go into all the technical details of the laws of Yain Nesach, and that will take us to the end of this semester. So next week in Yetzir Hashem will be the last Shigur, and then we will convert to something less controversial like fish when we get to February when we resume. Okay, so we'll stop there.